This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help, you save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
If you thought the Papa Roger saga was the only strange thread in this case, think again! Because just as the online persona fades, another battlefront opens. Inside the courtroom and behind the prison walls, on paper, Koberger's sentencing should have closed the book. He pled guilty, waived appeals rights. Case shuts. Right? But the law is never that neat. Thanks to precedents like Garza versus Idaho, even someone who signed away their right to appeal can still try to claw it back if they claim their attorney ignored a direct instruction. That's a legal crack in the door, and it has people asking, could Koberger actually try to appeal anyway? Could he force Ann Taylor's hand? And if he did, would it go anywhere or just stall out in the courts? On one hand, the law seems airtight. On another, history has shown there's always some arguments to be made. And Koberger, as we've seen, is never short of complaints. And those complaints, well, they've now shifted from the courtroom to the cell block. What we've learned since his transfer is that the so-called criminal mastermind is unraveling fast, from griping about missing nutrients on his meal tray to filing grievances over threats from inmates. Koberger's life behind bars looks less like the controlled, calculating figure we imagined and more like a man in free fall. He's gone from cushy conditions at Latah County, private cell, vegan meals, access to electronics, to the unforgiving grind of Ada County's prison population. And it shows. It raises a bigger point. What does this all mean? When someone who built his entire persona on control suddenly, when he has none. The academic who studied criminology, who obsessed over dominance, now sits in a cage where the rules are written by others and enforced by men who couldn't care less about his theories. That's not just punishment, that's psychological dismantling. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, joining us, a contributor. Let's walk this through legally. Does Koberger have any shot at wriggling through this September 3rd window? And bigger picture, when you look at how quickly he's crumbling behind bars, what does it tell us about the man he really is compared to the myth that he tried to project? Let's get into it.
Well, essentially, there's a case called Garza versus Idaho, which I find very interesting that it was actually in Idaho. And so this is very relevant. It went up to the Supreme Court. And essentially, this fellow named Garza, he pled guilty, just like Koberger. So the fact pattern, he wasn't a murderer, but it was the same situation. He mm-hmm. pled guilty, he signed a plea agreement, and he waived his right to appeal. Mm-hmm. But after sentencing, Garza said to his attorney, listen, I know I waived my right, but I want you to file it anyway. Mm-hmm. And the attorney said, well, I'm not going to file it. And so this went all the way up to the Supreme Court because he sought relief saying, listen, my attorney is not fulfilling their Sixth Amendment duty because I'm asking for it to be filed, whether I waived it or not. So essentially, what the Supreme Court said in a nutshell was, wait a minute. You have to show that the attorney was deficient in some way, mm-hmm. and in some way didn't provide, the due, what an attorney must do under the Sixth Amendment.
Sure. And yeah. So ineffective assistance of counsel is what he was trying to argue. Yep.
Yep. What I was trying to say.
That's how I do it all the time. I describe words.
Describing word salad here. Sorry about that. So anyway, that is a point that at least Brian Koberger, he could do that. He could say, Ann Taylor, I want you to file an appeal. And if Ann Taylor says no, we could go down that same road. And I think it would end up in nowhere land, just mm-hmm. like with Garza.
Yeah.
But the point is, it's not over until it's over. Or she could say, okay, I'm going to file one. And then we could see where that would ferret out in the court system. But it's not over until November 30th. September 3rd. That was the date of, the timeline given.
How would that be ineffective assistance of counsel? I mean, it's like saying, I want to go into the bowling alley, but they're closed. The doors are closed. But I want to bowl. Well, just break the window open and go grab a ball. No one would say, well, that's an okay thing to do. It's like, these are the rules. They've already been set. We've agreed to them that this is a closed business. You can't just go in and do this. You've already said you're not going to file this. There's no avenue for you to file this anymore. Your attorney would be wasting time even making this paperwork out because you can't file it. You can't, you won't be seen. But I guess what that is saying is, well, maybe it will.
Well, and I want to make another point, which I really didn't do a good job of finishing up what happened after the original rule.
Yeah.
Really. The decision was actually reversed again in a 6-3 ruling. And so the court actually held that there was a presumption of prejudice. So anyway, the court basically said that an appeal of a waiver is not absolute and does not eliminate the right to challenge the validity and fundamental claim. So this is why, from a legal standpoint, this isn't necessarily quite over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something that I think we all need to, hopefully September 4th comes and nothing happens.
Yeah. Do you... It's a weird, do you think he would file an appeal at the outset of the trial after the verdict was handed down and he went away and agreed, he's not going to appeal all that stuff? I would have said it that day. Yeah, I don't think he's going to do anything. After reading all of his complaint letters and how little snowflake Brian is thus far in prison, I wouldn't imagine he's already trying to draft an appeal himself behind bars in his little notepad there. I think he may be trying to do anything he can to get out of this setting.
Well, that's why I'm wondering if he is going to ask for this.
Yeah.
Because as you said, look at him. He's mad because he doesn't have his 6 required nutritional items on his tray or whatever to fill out the complement of milks and meats and veggies and fruits or whatever. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I tell you, for the first time, I wonder if he is going to make it. I've never really thought about it before now, watching all these silly complaints he has. He seems like such a snowflake.
He's going to die. Yeah. I mean, he's not going to survive in there. I'm very surprised by the amount of snowflakeness we've already seen in the course of literally a couple weeks. All of it, and the idea that he has that he's going to file these complaints and they're somehow not going to get out to the public, that they're all going to, I don't know what he's thinking, but it's nothing he clearly paid attention to when studying with anybody about the prison system. And maybe they don't teach it. Maybe they don't talk about what works and what doesn't in there. But like naming the folks off and calling out people for saying things like, the only we're going to be eating today is Koberger's. Oh, it's this guy that said that. That also not going to pan out well for you, Brian, behind bars. But he didn't seem to take any or read any books on this before going into his cell on how to survive.
Well, I would say this, and from the beginning, people in academia, they study, you know, myself, criminology, yep. right? Anybody who studies criminal justice at all levels, academically, you got it down.
Yeah.
you know the rules, you know what's in place. It's only when you get that real life practical experience of going to jail and going to prison, and I mean even visiting there, yeah. that you get a feel for how horrible it is going to be. And I think he's book smart on the topic, and he had, because jail is so different mm-hmm. from prison.
Yeah.
And as a practical matter, he is not coping well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because a lot of people will say prison is better than jail. Jail is better than prison. It probably depends on where you're at, but it seems like Koberger kind of made jail a little bit better than prison, or at least maybe he had more protections there or more freedoms, you know, to take hour long showers and not worry about things entering orifices, things of that nature. Now it's suddenly things are getting real in the prison.
Well, you know, when he was at the Latah County Jail, I mean, that was Shangri-La. It really yeah. was. Big cell, television, you know, iPad, connectivity to the world, mm-hmm. You know, vegan diet. It was unbelievable. Ashley Banfield did a good job of just breaking down how spoiled he was in that yeah. environment. But then, you know, they got the great idea to move to Ada County, which I will continue to say was one of the biggest mistakes they made in this case, at least for, you know, Brian Koberger. And things changed. It got a little tougher. Mm-hmm. This is so different if you've been in prison before. I mean, those doors closed, the smell of that place, the inmates, these inmates are the worst of the worst. They could give a crap and they can stay up for hours mm-hmm. and berate him over those vents. And I say, keep going.
What sticks with me after that discussion is the difference between what Koberger imagined and the reality he's now living. This is a man who studied criminal justice like a playbook, who thought he'd outsmart the system by anticipating every move. And yet, the second the walls closed in, he became the guy complaining about milk cartons and nutrient counts. It's not control, that's fragility. That's the unraveling of a persona. The idea and the appeal question just adds to the irony. He may try to force his attorney to file one, citing Garza v. Idaho as the legal wedge, but even that feels like a desperate grasp. Appeals are supposed to be about errors of law, not about being unhappy with your lunch menu. And yet you can almost picture him scribbling notes in his cell, trying to argue his way into one more chance at relevance. But what matters more? And the paperwork is the psychology. What we're seeing isn't the profile of a hardened predator ready to endure punishment. We're seeing the collapse of a little boy who built his identity on dominance and intellectual superiority, only to find himself stripped of both. Behind bars, you don't win arguments with words. You don't intimidate with surveys or theories. You survive. Or you don't. And from the sound of it, Koberger is already drowning. That collapse raises its own unsettling questions. If this is who he really is, brittle, entitled, and unable to cope, what does that say about the crimes he's accused of? Was this really about dominance and control, or was it about insecurity and rage boiling over in the worst way imaginable? And if that's true, then this unraveling now isn't just predictable. It's the inevitable end of a man who was never as smart or as strong as he wanted the world to believe. The larger takeaway is that justice isn't just about the verdict. It's about watching the mask flip. The myth of the mastermind is gone. What's left is the reality, a fragile, self-pitying man sitting in a cell, realizing that no theory, no survey, no Papa Roger persona can save him from the grind of prison life. And in a strange way, that might be the most fitting ending he could ever face. Let me know your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi right there. You can do that same search wherever you're downloading podcasts and find us wherever you listen to podcasts. You can take us with you on the go as well. Press subscribe. We do greatly appreciate that. And let me know your thoughts, like I said, in the comments. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.